The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Plus, we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Max Jeffrey and I'm joined today by Katie Bulls and Kate Andrews. Inflation has slowed to 3.4%, we learnt this morning, which is the lowest level in 2.5 years. Kate, can you start by giving us the details on today's announcement?
Sure, Max. It's good news from the Office for National Statistics this morning that, as you say, inflation slowed to 3.4% in the 12 months leading up to February. That's down from 4% in January. Everything's going in the right direction. The data is looking good, and it is on track to get us back to target inflation at 2% by the spring. April's the month that we're really going to be looking at. I mean, it's great that we're seeing these updates now, but in April, Ofgem's new energy price cap comes in and some of the higher energy costs fall out of the data, and that's when you're expecting to see that fall back to 2%. I mean, there's some independent economists and forecasters who think it's going to fall below 2%, that it could be closer to 1.5%. It should be said that it is then expected towards the latter half of the year that inflation ticks up again, but nothing like what we've seen before. We're not going to be talking about double digits again. It might go back up to 2.5%, something like that. So look, this is good news. This is what the government has been aiming for. They made inflation their primary focus last year. They continue to like to talk about it because it's the only one of the five pledges that they delivered on, so to speak, I think certainly in formal terms. One of the big questions now will be what happens to interest rates. We will have an update from the Bank of England tomorrow about their latest decision around rates. I would not expect to see any shift yet. The Bank of England's wording in their recent reports about how they want to be sure that in the medium term, inflation can stay at target suggests that you should be looking at your first rate cut perhaps later on in the spring. They have another meeting in May and June, probably looking towards those meetings rather than tomorrow. But I'll be interested to see, out of the 9 members of the Monetary Policy Committee, how many are voting to start to cut rates, because we have seen some shift in the most recent vote, and it'll be interesting to see what the balance is.
Katie, what message is the government telling voters off the back of this news? Are they promising tax cuts? Is Hunt selling this as his own achievement?
Of course, Jeremy Hunt is selling this as a government achievement. And I think listeners are probably bored to death of us saying on the podcast that, you know, the biggest factors that are driving rental inflation falls outside the government's control. There are obviously some things you can do to make it worse, but this was always a target when you come to the five priorities, which we do not hear about so much these days. It was always one which it was expected to happen. It's a global trend. Yes, the government could do things that made it worse, but it is a global trend. We're fitting into that. That said, given Rishi Sunak doesn't have much to cheer about at the moment, this is good news for the government. Coming off the back of last week, where there was, you know, lots of talk of mutiny, and that hasn't completely gone away at all. But I think they needed a strong week this week, and then trying to economy week, which is clearly what the Tories, or what Number 10 wants to fight the election on as its main thing. And I think their ideal scenario is you get enough things that you can start to say, our plan is working. I bumped into an MP this morning who said, our plan is working, but he feels as though the comms in Number 10, and often people do blame the comms, not the policy, but they said, you know, people aren't necessarily noticing that it is. They said there are some things you can start to point to say, well, look at the progress we're making here. What do Labour have to say on that? But they don't feel they're getting a hearing from voters. And I suppose in the Number 10 best case scenario, they have enough time ahead of an autumn election to have a few more things to point to. The thing I think that they really need is for the bank to cut rates. So does the fall of inflation, I don't know, it's about to happen, but is this the beginning when it gets to about 2% that there'll be a rate cut, perhaps more than one, before the election? I think that is probably the most significant thing they can hope for. And then if you have that combined with a few other things, you can start to say, you know, don't completely laugh us off when we say that, you know, various things we have said we're going to do come up together to make a plan which, in inverted commas, is working. And then you turn on Labour. Right now it does not have cut through for obvious reasons.
It's that big difference between telling people that they're better off and people actually feeling and knowing that they're better off. And at the moment, we're definitely still in the former camp. And to Katie's point, a lot of pressure is being put on the bank to cut interest rates by stakeholders. One of those major stakeholders is, of course, the government. And, you know, it's still all very polite language, but you have heard some ministers now start to push back on the Bank of England. And the fact that rates historically are not that high, but in recent years are very high, and of course had to go up so quickly. The point of that is to tackle inflation. It is to take heat out of the economy. It means you're not going to have as much economic growth. But now they really want to see that economic growth, because I think that's part of the way that they're going to actually convince people, not just with words, but with, you know, in people's day-to-day lives, they'll actually be able to see that there are some benefits to the strategy.
And Kate, Rachel Reeves, the Shadow Chancellor, gave the Mace Lecture in the City of London yesterday evening. This is the lecture usually given by aspiring chancellors outlining their vision for the economy. You wrote in a blog for Coffee House yesterday that there were no big policy announcements about what Labour might do in power, but that wasn't the point of the speech. So what did Rachel Reeves have to say?
Yeah, the Mace Lecture is interesting because it's really not a space for an economic thinker to come out with big pieces of public policy, and it's not really even a space to be that political. They're supposed to be explaining to us their worldview, how they see things, how they think we can get more economic prosperity. And the Shadow Chancellor gave the Mace Lecture And the Shadow Chancellor delivered the Mace Lecture this year. She did that last night. It was almost an hour long. And I think we did learn things about her thinking. I found it interesting. Her three main areas, the themes that she focused on, were stability, investment, and reform. Those first two she tied to her phrase, Securenomics, which she created last year when she was in Washington, D.C., to try to play into Bidenomics, this idea that you have to invest your way to growth and prosperity. The trickiest thing for Rachel Reeves last night was having to explain why Labour then reneged on its promise of £28 billion a year for green energy investment. And that is actually where she got most political. And I thought it was a bit unfair. She blamed Liz Truss's mini budget for where interest rates are at now. Do not get me wrong, as we were saying on this podcast in that fateful autumn of 2022, Liz Truss did not help matters. I think our editor Fraser coined the term the moron premium, that the UK looked uglier than all the other countries and investors were demanding a higher return if they were going to let the UK keep borrowing. But I think it's fairly well established now that the effects of the mini budget have pretty much passed us by. And some of those consequences remain. I mean, if you renewed your mortgage at the time of the mini budget, obviously you're still reeling from that. So it's not to say that the consequences of the mini budget aren't still with us, but the idea that interest rates are high in the UK and not everywhere else in the world, the idea that this was spurred on by Liz Truss and nothing else is obviously absurd. What I also took away from her speech was the extent to which she's not afraid to talk about rebalancing power between market forces and the state in favor of the state. It's not the same as what the Tories are offering. A lot of people have been saying, oh, what's different? Well, it's quite different from what the Tories have been offering. It's different from what Tony Blair was offering. She's talking about a much more active role for the state. And I think I described it in the blog as offering too big to fail, but for the opposite end of the economic spectrum. Her talk about security and making things work is basically this very big promise that the state will be so active and so involved that the economic shocks that we've had, they won't affect you so much. And that the difficulties we've had that are insecurities, they won't affect you so much. If you really break down that promise, you're basically saying the state's going to have such an active role and be so involved, we're not going to let so many aspects of the economy fail that affect your average worker. I don't know how she makes good on that promise. What the speech didn't include is how on earth you make good on that promise. And I think the big question mark around it for a lot of people is, since when does a bigger, more bloated state really make people feel better off? When does it really protect you, actually, when the shocks come, especially if some of those shocks are related to crony capitalism and, you know, some of the scandals we've seen around companies and big government tied up together? That was missing. But she certainly thinks that this is the answer. And I can see for a lot of people how these years of economic insecurity during the pandemic, during the inflation crisis, during the cost of living crisis would find what she's selling very appealing. The question remains how she would deliver that.
Katie, Rachel Reeves has said that whichever party wins the next election, they'll be inheriting the worst set of economic circumstances since World War II. This kind of puts the blame for the UK's economic troubles at the foot of the Tories. How long do you think that sort of line will hold if there is a Labour government? after the next election?
I think you're going to have Labour effectively try and have their own version of the no money note. So when the Tories took over in the Lib Dem Tory coalition and Liam Byrne left a note saying there's no money left, having thought it would be a different person discovering that note than the one there was, because the result wasn't as expected. So he thought it would be his friend in the role who would see it as a joke. Instead, of course, it became the most effective attack against Labour used by both the Lib Dems and Tories, and he really undermined confidence in Labour's handling of the economy. One of the things that Rachel Reeves has been so focused on trying to fix, above trying to be interesting, she wants to sound safe to voters. Which I think goes to some of the things Kate was talking about in that speech about security. I think on the first day, or at least in the first week, effectively, you're going to probably see some stunt, or perhaps it'll be real, where they will say, you know how we said it was bad? It's even worse than we imagined in our absolute worst nightmares. And now we're on the inside and we've seen all these things that we couldn't see on the outside. The question as to how much, however, really is different. It's going to be even trickier for us, and therefore try and keep blaming or making it so when Labour say they can't do things or can't do certain spending, which is always going to be harder for a Labour chancellor than it is a Tory chancellor, in terms of things Labour MPs care more about than Tory MPs, the pressure for spending will be greater, and is already great from the Tories, but we'll try and pin it back to it's the careless Tories, it's the problematic Tories. And the question is, how long can that go? Because I think a point that was made recently, which is a good one, is we could right now be in a situation where Labour win a mega majority if you're going on the current polling, if the Tories keep fighting. But yeah, I don't mean this as a why the Tories could win after all type thing. There isn't that much enthusiasm for Labour. It feels a lot more as though there's lots of hatred and annoyance and people are fed up of the Tories. But it does mean you can have a really big majority, and yet it's quite fragile in its own way, because it's particularly people aren't completely sure what you're going to do. And they'll be hoping this line sticks for some time, but it's very hard to predict.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Kate. And thank you very much for listening.